spiritual feelings of happiness and intense ecstasies have no mundane comparison. Therefore, it is very difficult to give expression to such feelings. We can just have a glimpse of such ecstasy in the words of Sri Narada Muni. Each and every part of the body or sense has a particular function. After seeing the Lord, all the senses become fully awakened to render service unto the Lord, because in the liberated state, the senses are fully efficient in serving the Lord. As such, in that transcendental ecstasy, it so happened that the senses became separately enlivened to serve the Lord. This being so, Narada Muni lost himself in seeing both himself and the Lord simultaneously. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samniti Nandi Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Charanindi Vishesha Sunyavari Paschachale Satarne Om Gyanam Timurandasya Pananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Viritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Beva Cha Tikanam Pavani Vyo Vaishnava Vyo Namo Namaha. So Sri Narada Muni is talking about how he went off into the wilderness and then sat down under a pipala tree to meditate, as he had been taught, on the Paramatma, the Super Soul. And then something happened that had not happened before. He felt full of this is the bhava stage of the next to last or penultimate stage of toward prema. So here in the last verse 16, there was a description of the symptoms, the physical symptoms of bhava. In the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada calls them existential ecstasies, because it's asta sattvika vikara, they're physical transformations. Asta, eight of them. Hair stands on end, the eyes fill with tears, the voice chokes, there's trembling, and so on. So he experiences those. And then Krishna appears in the lotus of his heart. Hari says here, the Lord appears on the lotus of his heart. So that's the first time this has happened to him. And so when that happens, the next verse, prema, he's now made the transition from bhava to full love of God. Bhava is the preliminary stage. And then he is now in prema. And so prema atibara, excessive, then everything got more intense. His feelings of happiness were extreme feelings of happiness. And then he says, each of his anga, or bodily parts, himself became overwhelmed with his feeling, and he was then absorbed in the ocean of ananda. Anandam buddhivardhanam, we have the ocean of ananda, different words, different places. And then he said that in this way he couldn't see Ubayam, both. So Prabhupada explains this when he talks about, first of all, that the spiritual feelings of happiness and intense ecstasies have no mundane comparison. Sometimes in the material world, you can feel very intense love for a person, but it also presents a difficulty. I don't know if you have this expression in English, sometimes your children are called hostages to fortune. In other words, your happiness depends on your children, and so therefore your happiness depends on what happens to them. If something bad happens, really painful. So the thing in the material world is that everything is temporary. And we fall in love with somebody or something, and we become extremely attached, and then we suffer. There is no suffering in this world like that. Losing the objects to which you have become extremely attached. We in the world, we try to perpetuate, we form relationships with things and with people. From those relationships we feel happiness and pleasure. But then immediately there's anxiety because we need to keep those relationships going. We need to perpetuate them. But we fail. And of course, death is the ultimate failure to perpetuate our relationships. You may notice, for example, in the literature of different countries, there is stories of young love. Young people meet and fall in love with each other, and then somehow or other, it ends in tragedy. Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. You know, they're like 14 years old. They're very young. And they fall in this overwhelming love. And of course, in the last act, they're both dead. So there are many stories like this of people who fall overwhelmingly and uncautiously in love. Well, there's Goethe's famous The Sorrows of Young Werther, you know, that romantic novel. He ends up committing suicide over lost love. So we have these stories. And they're kind of what we call cautionary tales. They warn you, be careful. Be careful. And what happens is that this very overwhelming love is something that only happens to young people. After you've had a little experience of it, you get careful. You get cautious. You fall in love, and then you say, boy, I'm never going to do that again. It was wonderful, but look what happened. But we want to love. We really have a desire to love, as Prabhupada says this in the beginning of Nectar Devotion, our desire to love wants to expand without limit. But any time we place it in any object in the world, it has a limit. Because that love, the desire to love, is actually meant for Krishna. And when it finally comes in contact with Krishna, then it increases without limit. What really love is, it's with Krishna. What we call love in the material world is some kind of pale imitation of the real thing. So we use the word love, these words like here, like prema or priti or but they all had their mundane use in Sanskrit also. There's plenty of material love stories in Sanskrit. In the Mahabharata, there's the story of Nala and Damayanti, a famous love story. And Bhaktisiddhanta mentions this as an example of a material, of a mundane love story. Do you know the story, Nala and Damayanti? Well, I'll tell a mundane love story. It's a really charming story. Nala is a prince, and Damayanti is the princess who falls in love with him. From a distance, of course. In those days, it was always from a distance. And it was arranged that she would have a swayamvara, you know, where she got to select her groom. It was her own choice among all suitable candidates. Well, Damayanti was so beautiful and so lovely that all the devas wanted to marry her too. So what they did at her swayamvara is they all came to also try to get her, and to trick her, they changed their form, because the devas have this ability to change their form. And they made them, each one of them made themselves look exactly like Nala. So when she had the garland to pick her husband, she was confronted with a room full of Nalas, all identical. But she was in love with Nala. She didn't want a substitute. And her mind was so concentrated on Nala with love, that the power of her faithfulness to Nala was so great that it overpowered the demigod's ability to disguise themselves. And suddenly they were revealed as devas, because they rose up in the air. Because there's three ways that you can recognize a deva. Their feet don't touch the floor. They may come to earth, but normally they're a little above the earth. Two, their eyes don't blink. They have unblinking eyes. And three, their garlands never wither. So these are the three ways you can tell a deva. So all of a sudden, they all rose up in the air except for one, whose feet were planted on the earth. And their eyes were not blinking, so then she saw Nala. She married. That's the story, the force of her love. This is and of course, this is often told to illustrate the power of a woman's chastity. It can even defeat the devas. He tried to get a moral message out of this love story. That's what you can do. So, but what really, real love is experienced in connection with Krishna. Because there it can expand without any limit. And in fact, Krishna's expertise is always increasing the love of his devotees. This is the reason why the ocean of bliss is always increasing. Festivals I attended in ISKCON was Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja in New Vrindavan, and Prabhupada came. The place was packed with devotees, and there was a temple room. We all couldn't get in. I was in the outside. There was Prabhupada's had his asana, and then either side of him were two windows, And so we could, some of us who couldn't get inside the temple room, looked in the window, and where I was standing, I could see Prabhupada's right hand. That's all I could see, was just his right hand. And it was kind of amazing, because what Prabhupada did on Janmashtami, his way of celebrating Janmashtami, staying up until midnight, was to have somebody read Krishna book out loud to everybody else. So when I'm looking in the temple room, I can see all the devotees sitting there, you know, 1 hour, 2 hours, three, and then I notice it's always like in motion, you know, people are like going like this, and very restless, you know. And then I look at Prabhupada's hand, and it doesn't move. It was absolutely motionless all that time. Everybody else, the temple room, sort of, everybody was sitting in the same place, but there was always something going on. But he was completely still. And I was transfixed by his hand. It was just, didn't move. He was so still. I told this once to Hari Sori. He said, yeah, Prabhupada, you know, he said, once we got Prabhupada a watch that was a self-winding watch, you know, didn't have a knob to wind it, because there was a little weight inside and the natural movement of your wrist will wind the watch. And he said they got Prabhupada a self-winding watch and it would always stop. Yeah, I guess it's mostly nervous energy that keeps the watch running. Although he did so much, he was at the same time very still. Anyway, so at that Janmashtami, Prabhupada is looking at the deities Radha, Vrindavan, Chandra. He said of the deities that Krishna is so kind, he's appeared before you just like, looking just like an American boy and girl, he said. Anyway, so he's looking at, and he's explaining how Radha and Krishna together are always increasing in beauty, knowledge and love. Krishna, because we know this, Krishna always increases. This is how it happens. He says that Radharani looks at Krishna and she sees how beautiful Krishna is. And when she sees that, her joy, her bliss increases. And when her joy increases, her beauty increases. And when Krishna sees that Radharani has become even more beautiful, his happiness increases and his beauty increases. And then when Radharani sees that Krishna has become even more beautiful, she becomes even happier and her beautiful increases. And there, he probably said, it goes on like this forever. It never stops. This is actually based on a description by Krishnadas Kaviraj and Chaitanya Charitamrita, how it is ever increasing. Remember that Radha and Krishna have spiritual bodies. Now, when anybody is happy, they look better. Traditional saying is that a woman is most beautiful on her wedding day because she's so happy. So when you're happy, you look better. But you know, there are limits. How far that can go. But in a spiritual body, there's no difference between the soul and the body, the soul and the mind and the body. So every happy joy is immediately reflected and expressed fully in the body, in the spiritual body. So that's why this is always increasing on. So these are spiritual ecstasies. And here, Prabhupada is saying it's hard to describe. And there's different ways of reading this verse in the way Prabhupada does and the commentators he was following. When he says, I could not see both them and myself, is that each of the senses, so the eyes to see the Lord, the nose to smell his fragrance, the ears to hear his voice or his flute, whatever it may be, every sense became totally absorbed separately in its own ecstasy, so that you lost all consciousness of yourself as an individual. And in this way, this described this extreme state of absorption in the Lord by each of the senses separately enlivened, as he said. Each of them was full in themselves. And so your attention is all absorbed in all different ways and different parts of the Lord. So there's this sense of being lost. This is what Prabhupada is trying to describe. Vishnu Chakravarti says, when I couldn't see both of us, was that this is leading into the next verse, because the Lord disappears. Having shown himself like this, he then disappears from view, from Narada. And Narada faints. He loses consciousness from the shock of the disappearance of the Lord. And we'll see that the disappearance of the Lord actually increases his love. Because here, strong feelings of separation, while they're like separation in the material world, there's actually a form of ecstasy. And what looks like grief actually increases bliss. So this is how he brings the Narada Muni to more and more intense stage of love of God. Of prema by bringing about this separation. That'll be described in the next verses. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about this translation, a few things about this these stages of bhava and prema. What we have here is at the stage of bhava. This is where it's already been described that these physical symptoms appear, and what's there at bhava is love of God. It's not yet prema. Prema is this love fully developed and enriched. But in the beginning, bhava is just, it's rati. It's called rati. It's love for Krishna. And it's in a certain way, like a servant. It says that Narada Muni's relationship with Krishna is a mixture of friendship and servitude together. So this is his basic way he relates to Krishna, and he has the feelings which are appropriate to that relationship. Normally we talk of this as one's rasa, but rasa, it's rati. Or it's pretty in a certain mood, because rasa is those feelings when they're intensified by different additions. So the feeling at bhava of this attraction for the Lord with a certain mentality. When prema development, this develops, this becomes a basic component of prema called stayi bhava. It's the permanent. Stayi sort of means steady or permanent feeling that's always there. And then other things are added to it to make it more intense and variegated. And so when these other additions are there, then you have full prema. Here I'm reading from Bhaktivinoda Thakur from the Dasamula Tattva. He says, rasa is created when rati. Remember, the word is rasa with a short A. It's a rasa dance with a long A, but it's rasa with a short A. So rasa is created when rati has matured and produced sthayi bhava. When the four ingredients of bhava, that is vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, and vyabhichari bhava are added, rasa is churned up. it's a resin. So these are the components, the four ingredients that make rasa: vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, and vyabhichari bhava. Vibhava refers to the relationship itself, because rasa is a relationship, and so it's vibhava is divided into two parts: alambana, the person who has the feeling, the support, and udipana, the thing that stimulate bhava. And then alambana, the persons involved, there are two. Ashraya. Ashraya means the one who has the feeling, which means shelter, but where the feeling has taken shelter. So ashraya is the devotee, and vishaya, the object, is Krishna. The person to whom the sthayi bhava is directed is the vishaya, the object of rasa. In this realm of spiritual rasa, the object of worship is the vishaya, and the worshipper is the shelter, the ashraya. And then the qualities and the characteristics of the object of worship are known as udipanas, the stimula, the thing that excites it. And then there's also the anubhavas. These are external bodily symptoms of ecstasy. Dancing, rolling on the ground, singing loudly, stretching the body, crying loudly, yawning, breathing heavily, disregarding the presence of others. You're like a wild person, you don't care what they think. Drooling, laughing madly, reeling ahead, belching. This is the list, and you see the nectar of devotion. And then we already mentioned the sattvika bhavas. These are what show up at the stage of bhava. That is the prana, internal bodily disturbances of the air. You become stunned, you break out into a sweat, your hair stands on end, your voice shakes, you tremble, and so on. And then there's the vyabhichari bhavas. There's 33 of them. These are things that come and go. They're transitory. They're also called sanchari, emotions that increase this feeling. So this is when all these things are added, then you have full blown rasa. When there's bhava, usually when bhava is characterized, it's by the sthayi bhava. In the fifth verse of the Shishastra prayers. The sixth verse, right? When will my eyes, Nayanam Galadasra Dayaya Daraya Vadanam Gudgada Rudaya Gira Kulakaya Nichitam Vapukada Tavanama Grahine Bhavishati? When I change your names, when will my eyes fill with tears, my hair stand on end, my voice become choked? That's describing that verse in the Shishastika describes bhava with these symptoms. But Prabhupada tells us something that's important to note, so I'm going to bring it up here. I thought I copied the text. Okay. Let's see if I did. Oh. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam where he says, yeah, here it is. It's Canto 2, text number 3. Canto 2, chapter 3, text 24. The English goes like this. Certainly, that heart is steel-framed. Asmasaram. You could say literally made of iron. Iron-hearted, steel-hearted person. That heart is steel-framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and the hair stand on end. So there's mentioning this stage of bhava with the symptoms, the astasattvika vikara mentioned. So I want to read just part of Prabhupada's purport to this. He says, we must always remember that hearing and chanting are the basic principles of discharging devotional duties, and if they are properly performed, there will follow the reactional ecstasy with signs of tears in the eyes and standing of the hair on the body. These are natural consequences and are the preliminary symptoms of the bhava stage, which occurs before one reaches the perfectional stage of prema, love of Godhead. If the reaction does not take place, even after continuous hearing and chanting of the holy name of the Lord, it may be considered to be due to offenses only. This is the opinion of the Sandarbha. In the beginning of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, if the devotee has not been very careful about evading the 10 kinds of offenses at the feet of the holy name, certainly the reactions of feelings of separation will not be visible by tears in the eyes and standing of the hairs on the body. The bhava stage is manifested by 8 transcendental symptoms, namely inertness, perspiration, standing of the hairs on end, failing in the voice, trembling, paleness of the body, tears in the eyes, and finally trance. The Nectar of Devotion explains these symptoms vividly and vividly describes other transcendental developments. Now this is the interesting point. He says, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has very critically discussed these bhava displays in connection with some unscrupulous neophytes imitating the above symptoms for cheap appreciation. So people pretend you want to be known as an advanced devotee, or you may even want to fool yourself, or some people are naturally sentimental or whatever, but it's not real bhava, but it looks like it. And sometimes, unfortunately, even in Vrindavan, people use a chemical stimuli to induce feelings. You know, not only Vishwanath Chakravarti, but also Srila Rupa Goswami treat them very critically. Sometimes all the above 8 symptoms of ecstasy are imitated by the mundane devotees, Prakriti Sahajyas. But the pseudo-symptoms are at once detected when one sees the pseudo-devotee addicted to so many things. You know the word pseudo? That means false. Latin word, P-S-E-U-D-O, pseudo. Even though one is decorated with the signs of a devotee, a person addicted to smoking, drinking, or illegitimate sex with women cannot have all the above mentioned ecstasies, ecstatic symptoms. And so anyway, Prabhupada then goes on to say that's one thing. On the other hand, somebody who may be very advanced may not show these symptoms. And he mentions when Lord Chaitanya was talking with Ramananda Roy on the bank of the Godavari River, he had these symptoms, but there were some Brahmana attendants of Ramananda Roy who were not devotees, and so Lord Chaitanya suppressed the external manner. The feelings went on inside, but he suppressed any kind of external manifestation. So sometimes you see them in people who are not really advanced devotees, and then Prabhupada said, for certain reasons, they may not be visible on somebody who's advanced. So he's saying these are actually unreliable indicators of advancement. He says, therefore, real steady bhava is definitely displayed in the matter of cessation of material desires, kshanti, utilization of every moment in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, avyarta kalatvam. And then he goes on to list at least some of them, which you find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the list that is given in 18 and 19 in the Majjalila 23. This is the translation goes, when the seed of ecstatic emotion for Krishna fructified. So this is, says bhava ankure jata. So the seed of bhava has now blossomed or shows its fruit. Then these are also called anubhava. One of the components of rasa. These are the anubhavas. And Prabhupada and Acharya are saying these are more reliable. These things we have to see. When the seed of ecstatic motion for Krishna fructifies, the following nine symptoms manifest in one's behavior. Forgiveness, concern that time should not be wasted, detachment, absence of false prestige, hope, eagerness, taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord, attachment to descriptions of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and affection for those places where the Lord resides, that is, a temple or holy place like Vrindavan. These are all called anubhava, subordinate signs of ecstatic emotion. They are visible in a person in whose heart the seed of love of God has begun to fructify, that is, to bear fruit. So this is an interesting list, and this is what we should try to see is happening. The first one is kshanti, which is translated as forgiveness. Other translations, tolerance, forbearance. What it means is not being disturbed when there's every reason to be disturbed. if you read this, we don't have time to go through it, but if you read this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, every one of these is discussed in Bengali, and an example is given. So the example of this is Maharaj Parikshit, when this monster snake bird is going to come and kill him, this Hollywood, you know, special effects monster is going to show up and kill him. He's very calm and peaceful and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, this shanti. That's what it means. So these different translations, forgiveness or tolerance or forbearance, they're all part of it, but that's the essential meaning. So that's one. Avyata kalatvam, not wanting to have a moment wasted, to be engaged at every moment in Krishna's service. This is another one of these. Virakti, detachment. from anything material. They're kind of natural detachment, spontaneous detachment, virakti. Manas shunyata, shunya means void, so devoid of pride. Mana means pride, so it's empty of pride. That's the kind of emptiness we should cultivate, not the Buddha's emptiness, but the emptiness of false ego of every kind. Mana shunyata, absence of pride or false prestige. Asha bandhu, great hope even if you have feelings of separation, you never give up. Krishna will come. Krishna is there. Krishna's mercy is there. Asha bandha. Samudkanta, eagerness, just like in this stage, Narada Muni describes, every sense is eager to see Krishna. It's this kind of enlivenment all the time to be engaged in devotional service and to glorify Krishna. Well, that gets specific later on. Priti means, that's another for virati, affection, love. For priti tat vasati stale, the Krishna's places of residence. You also like that. Vrindavan. Even if we can't live in Vrindavan, we want to be there. Mayapur. Or a temple where Krishna is. You should love those places. That's not a material attachment. It's a spiritual attachment. Prittis tad vasate stale. I skipped the asakti. You remember asakti means addiction? Before the ruchi. But here it's asakti gunakyane, deep, strong attachment to describing the transcendental qualities of the Lord, glorifying the Lord. So these are the things that one should look for as the signs of Baba. This verse from Majjha 23:18-19, we should study this verse and then look at all the examples. There's an example given for each of these, and because this happens in purports given. The verse is there in Sanskrit, and then there's a discussion in Bengali. If you just read the translation, you won't notice maybe the switch in languages, but that's and sometimes you're reading the translation of Chaitanya Charitamrita where it looks like something is being repeated. A verse is some statement is made, then it's made again. But what's there in the original? There's a Sanskrit verse, then there's a Bengali translation. That's what happens like that. But anyway, we have all these resources for understanding these advanced stages. And explain, like when it says samutkanta, eagerness, here, this eagerness is chiefly characterized by an ardent desire to associate with the Lord. These are all explained in detail. We don't have any more time. Let's stop there. And maybe any comments or questions before we close up? Okay. Yeah.
So what's the difference between the old temples and new temples of Krishna? Is there
the old temples and the
age-old temples which are been there for like 1,000 years and like new temples, is there a difference?
They're equally spiritual potent. And really, like for example, some of the old temples we like a lot, especially because like Jagannath Puri, because Lord Chaitanya was there and things like that. But you can, you this Jagannath temple, you can get all the same benefits. You will not be cheated. You would like to go see the, no, I mean, what you would like to go see the old one, but not everybody can. And it means that if I don't have the money for a ticket to India, somehow my spiritual life is throttled and held back? No. Yeah. So you can get everything here. And so Prabhupada established these temples so that everybody can be benefited.
Yeah. And Krishna is present in all the temples, irrespective of...
Yes, but one has to say... For Krishna to be fully interactive, the deity in the temple has to be treated like God. Because if you treat the deities like stone or wood, Krishna's there, but he'll just be a statue. But if you say, yeah, Krishna's really here, I have to feed him, I have to take care of them, care of him, then. Because I've seen temples where it's just a statue sitting on a shelf, where the people aren't really devotees, but they're just following some custom. So the potency is not there. But if there's interaction with devotees, then Krishna comes out. Prabhupada once gave a lecture. He went to the Vrindavan temple, and he saw that the deity had a garland with the flowers were dead. And he gave a very heavy lecture. And he said, if this is happening in my presence, what will happen after I'm gone? He says, it means you think the deity is just stone, that, oh, he won't know that the flowers are dead. You know? And he says, you'll think, oh, my spiritual master has given me this heavy burden. Now I have to every day get up, I have to worship these deities, oh what a tedious thing it is, and I'm just doing it because I have to, and there's no love. He says there has to be love, and the heavy burden he called galagraha, which literally means I got this thing around my neck, so he says, is it vigraha or galagraha? So that's we have to treat the deities properly, and then they'll be manifest. Then that's the thing, yeah.
So we can say, because of course Krishna is manifesting according to love, which is the kind of joy that is shown to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, because sometimes someone could say, yeah, but then you see there is a temple many hundreds of years, the deity is worshipped by pure devotees, mm-hmm. and then there is another temple. Naturally, Krishna more manifest than the other temple. But it's not like this, because if the other devotees in the other temple have also a lot of love, then Krishna is manifest equally.
Yes, that's right.
Not a matter of how long or.
No, there's not arithmetic involved exactly. It's feeling, And also, old temples, people may have committed a lot of offenses too, you don't know, in the past, you know. Okay? Yeah?
What's about private deities then? I mean, in the temple, if you have an official, then you need a certain number of pujaris to properly take care.
Mm-hmm.
If you have private deities, you are on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do whatever is possible for you. So how much is manifesting?
Again, it's the same thing. You know, the six Goswamis, before they put their deities in temples, they were their private deities. It was just, Sanatana Goswami's deity in a hut. Then they had temples and put them there. It depends on the relationship. I mean, often for private deities, if you really want to be, their requirements for worship, in a temple. There's these rules and regulations over there. The devotee is very advanced. It's not really an issue. But the other way for private deities is Shalagram Shila. Or Gorni Thai, actually. You know how you install Gorni Thai? Put them there, they're installed. Just like same way you could treat them just like Panchatattva would installed by painting and put it on the wall. That's installed deities, you know. So some people say, well, I have uninstalled deities. What does installation mean? Is that you've asked them to come and they show up. That's really what it is. Remember when Prabhupada was doing the installation, I was there for their deities in the Krishna Balaram Mandir. It was a whole thing because he had to get the people who knew all the rituals. He said, if we don't do this, the local people will not be convinced that they're installed. So, you know, there was 3 days of rituals for installing the deities. It's bona fide. It was according to you know, the rules laid down by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. They were Vaishnava Brahmanas, but they were doing it. The first group, we had to pay, they were hired by us to do it. And the first group, Prabhupada had an interesting test. The first group of Brahmanas that came, we negotiated, yeah, they would do it for us. And then he said, now let's take prasadam. And they wouldn't take prasadam with us. And Prabhupada said, we can't use these people. Because what happened is they'll do the installation, and then he'll say that my Western disciples, they aren't fit to worship them. We have to worship them. And they'll try to take over the worship as a source of income. So then the next group, they took prasadam with us. So Prabhupada said, okay. And so they had 3 different altars of different shapes, and there were things going on simultaneously. Sometimes Prabhupada came out. I guess they regarded him as the yajamana. And he had to sit there while they did things. It was very interesting. He just sat there very calmly, and the guy is chanting and picking up leaves and putting them here and touching Prabhupada's hand and touching to this. It was quite a ceremony, 3 days. But Prabhupada had a 24-hour kirtan going on. And he told us, actually, he said, this kirtan is installing the deity. That's what's actually doing it. It's a way, you know, it's really they come when they're invited. It's not exactly the ritual. No, so there's 2 platforms. You know, there's the spontaneous platform and the regulative platform. Anyway, that can also bring the deities without any unceremoniously they show up, you know, somehow or other, get themselves installed. And it depends on the relationship, whether they come for you or not. Otherwise, all the ceremonies in the world won't do a bit of good. You're dealing with you're dealing with Krishna.
Mm-hmm. So, since you said that it depends on relationship, so then let's say if I have a very good relationship with deities or if they are not being worshipped very nicely, let's say, so then does it matter?
Sometimes they're not being worshipped very nicely simply because you haven't got the facility. Mm-hmm. It can be there. And actually, everything that you do physically, you could do by meditation. Even if you don't have the resources, you can do the whole thing by meditation. There's a story that's in the Nectar of Devotion. You can't cook a big feast for Krishna. You just do it by meditating. You know, you give what little simple things you have. If it's not being done very nicely because I'm neglectful, because I don't put the deity to the rest on time because I want to watch a television program, then that's something else again. Yeah. So if your desire is correct and you want to worship the Lord, and then he'll come, he'll reciprocate. And if there's no feeling, you can do everything precisely by the book, and he won't be there. It's not a mechanical process. You better stop. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrīla Bhāgavatam ki jai.
So we can sort of prove.